you on the door. Worry about your friends, that's all you just have to know. I've been beating your mind. No fear, but you gotta let me know. I'm all ears and I got a lot of room. I'm on my way, if you wanna take a pill, I'm on my way. Alright guys, welcome into another spooky edition of Drew's Views. I'm here always with Logan, and we're ready to get a statement Saturday, as there's a huge slate of games this week. So we're going to go ahead, there's a lot on the line, there's a lot for us to talk about. Like I said, we're going to go ahead and get this thing rolling. I appreciate everybody coming in. We got a question that I want to ask you guys, so once, just listen to this for just a moment. We'll get you guys rolling, and we'll get into the player of the week, team of the week, and get to a question about the college football blue bloods. So thanks everybody again for coming out, and we're excited for another episode of Drew's Views, week 10. Yo,
what's up?
What's cracking?
Nah, just chilling.
So we're gonna go ahead and jump into last week's games. As everybody knows, I freaking picked Baylor. Not the worst pick of the pickle. I'm seeing how bad I can get. Obviously, Kansas has been the worst pick so far for the spread 'em. But we're gonna go ahead and go over the last week's games, and then we'll jump into the. We got a couple things to go over this week, so we're going to try to go a little quicker here. First one we had was number 9 Florida versus number 7 Georgia. Georgia was a 6.5-point favorite. I definitely covered that spread with a 20-piece of Georgia, 37-17. We both picked that game right. And then we had number 18 Iowa at Penn State. Penn State was a 6.5-point favorite. And I actually didn't cover, won by 6, but Logan picked Iowa. I picked Penn State, so I pulled that one out. Next game we both got right. Houston was a 7.5-point favorite, definitely covered with a 31-point win at home over number 21 USF. A big game by Derek King. That's going to be my player of the week. We'll go over his stats here in just a minute. Number 14 Wazoo at Stanford. Stanford was a 3-point favorite. Wazoo actually ended up winning by 3. We both got that one right. Tennessee at South Carolina. Tennessee choked it away. South Carolina wins 27-24. I picked that one wrong. Logan picked that one right. Miami 3.5-point at Boston College. Boston College wins by 13. Like we said, we didn't know why they played the quarterback. But anyways, Logan, we both got that one right. Michigan State, Purdue at Michigan State. Michigan State was a 2.5-point favorite. Michigan State won 23-13. Logan got that one right. I actually picked that one wrong. And then the game we both got wrong this week was number 6 Texas, 3.5-point favorite at OK State. OK State actually won by 3. That puts Logan at a total points of 52 for the year, and that puts me at 48. So that's all the wins that we've compiled, and then the points from the spread. So Logan's up by 4 at the moment. See if I can make a comeback this week. We're going to go ahead and we'll go with play of the weeks. Like I said, my play of the week was Derek King from Houston. 28-41 passing, 419 yards and 5 passing touchdowns, but also had 11 carries for 132 yards and 2 touchdowns and a blowout win over previously ranked USF. So that's 7 total touchdowns and a huge win for the Cougs. Who's your play of the week?
My player of the week is Matt Colburn, the running back from Wake Forest. He had 243 yards on 20 carries while averaging 12.3 yards per carry and scoring 3 touchdowns against the team that pulled his scholarship the day before signing day back in 2015 in Louisville. So he kind of showed out and kind of rubbed it in their face. And they ended up smacking Louisville 56-35.
Yeah, when Louisville loses, the world wins. So next one is team of the week, and I'm kind of pulling at you this week. I'm going with a bad one. It's got to be Oregon. I mean, in the famous words of Lindsey Buckner, what the hell? They go to Arizona and get a 30-piece by a 4-4 Arizona team, and or actually a 3-4 Arizona team, and you have the number one rated NFL quarterback supposedly on your roster, and you go and score 15 points against a team that's allowing 420 yards, and you only managed to pull out 270. So, come on, man.
Yeah, my team of the week is Washington. They lost last week to Cal. They lost 12-10. They lost the game due to two costly turnovers, as essentially, you know, all the stats were essentially the same. And the two turnovers really costed them another embarrassing loss for Washington. You got to kind of say that Washington's been one of the most disappointing teams all year if you look how high they were ranked when they first came starting this season. And, you know, Browning's been super, super unimpressive along with that defense that was supposed to be really good. So, I mean, that's another bad loss for Washington, who got beat by a pretty mediocre Cal team.
Yeah, and I mean, both teams from the Auburn and Washington matchup have been equally unimpressive after that game. So, I mean, they were talking about Auburn being a national championship contender and Washington being in the race for the playoffs. So, definitely a weird season for Gus Malzahn, and then you got Chris Peterson up in Washington. So, that got a lot to work with. Washington's going to have the Georgia transfer Easton next year, so maybe he'll be able to kind of come in and be a good change of slate for him, because they haven't had – I don't think they've had their running back Gaskins a lot this year. So I don't know what the issue is, but if anybody's going to figure out, it's going to be Chris Peterson. So before we go into the weekly Q&A, I'm kind of throwing this on you. We sparked a debate earlier at work, and we're not going to answer this now, obviously, but I just wanted everybody's input on it. So here it is. Who do you consider the blue bloods of college football? Obviously, Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Texas, Oklahoma, and USC. But who else would you include? I just want everybody to comment, DM me, whatever you want to do. But I want to get the debate going, because I think there's probably about seven more teams that you would consider blue bloods. But that's what I wanted. That's what I want to do. I want to see everybody's opinion. So, and again, just to go over it one more time, who do you consider the blue bloods of college football, excluding Notre Dame, Bama, Ohio State, Michigan, Texas, Oklahoma, and USC? All right. So into the weekly Q&A. I'll go ahead and answer the first one here. Who has a better chance of winning this Saturday, LSU or Kentucky? I mean, Kentucky definitely has a better chance of winning. I mean, LSU, they're both at home, obviously, but LSU's got a lot more question marks as to how they're going to stop Alabama. And, I mean, everybody knows what they're getting with Kentucky, and everybody knows what they're getting with Georgia. But, I mean, this is Alabama's first test, and I think that LSU is going to be a good test for them. I think it'll be a first-half game. It'll be a close game in the first half, and then Alabama's ultimately going to probably win by 20-plus. But I think Kentucky can keep it close with Georgia, and they have a lot better chance of winning than LSU does.
Yeah, and I think so, too. I think, you know, you could kind of see what Vegas says about it, too, because they got Alabama as a 14-point favorite at LSU. And then, of course, Kentucky's an underdog at home. But Kentucky definitely has a better chance of winning this, you know, of winning that game against Georgia, I feel like, than the game against LSU against Alabama.
So the next question, why does J.G., Jarrett Grantano, the Tennessee quarterback, have the pocket presence of a seventh grader? I'll let you go first.
Because he's not that good of a quarterback.
That's debatable. Anyways, I mean, J.G.'s pocket presence is really, really bad for whatever reason. I know it's mostly because of offensive line, but J.G. can't read blitzes for whatever reason, or they don't give him the power to – change the offensive line scheme at the line of scrimmage and kind of shift them which way they need to go. So I don't know if it's just JG in general that he can't read the defense. He can read the defense, but if he can't read it pre-snap and that he can't see blitzes, or if it's just schematically. But JG's going to have to do that. Or like I said in the comments whenever this was posted, he's going to be brain dead. And Hunter Collin actually said that he's going to be Wes Welker Jr. So, J.G. has a lot to work on. He's just a sophomore, so he's getting a lot better. But his pocket presence definitely and his pocket awareness definitely needs to be bumped up a couple notches. All right, so there's a couple questions in with this one. I'll go first. What are the keys to the big game in Lexington this weekend? What does Kentucky have to do to win? What can Georgia do to screw it up? the keys to the game, obviously, is Kentucky's run game. I think Kentucky needs to completely dominate the time of possession. Kentucky can't turn the ball over, and I think they need to force turnovers. I think Kentucky needs to be plus two in the turnover margin to really, really be in this game. The biggest key, though, is the quarterback play. It's going to be – obviously, Fromm will probably outplay Terry Wilson, but Terry Wilson needs to have another good game, and he has in big games. He's stepped up in all the big games that they've had. So, it's not – I don't think it's really on Benny. Benny's gonna get his either way, and I think there's a lot on the injuries with Bunchy Stallings and a couple of the other Kentucky offensive linemen. That's going to be a big story. And then another key for Kentucky to win and what they need to do to win is their linebackers outside of Josh Allen, obviously. Cash Daniel and Jordan Jones need to be able to cover the slots. That's going to be a big spot to watch because Georgia has probably the second fastest receiving corps in the SEC behind Alabama. So that's going to be interesting to watch. And Georgia, what can Georgia do to screw it up? Turn over the ball, get away from what they got back to last week against Florida with running the football. Georgia needs to keep pounding the football and keep pounding Holyfield. So there's a lot that Georgia can do, but Kentucky needs to do a lot more in order to win.
Yeah, I feel like one of the big things that Kentucky's offense needs to do for them to have successful drives is that they need to obviously run the ball with Benny Snell, but they need to get solid pickups on first and second down so you're not having third and long. And, you know, you're basically – when you get third and long, you're basically almost forced to throw the football. And that's when Kentucky's offense kind of starts stalling out is when they have to go to Terry and, you know, start making those plays on the outside and picking up those 7 or 8-plus yards on third down just to get a first down. So, first and second down for Kentucky are super big as far as offense goes. And then on defense, you have to kind of contain Holyfield. You can't let him pick 6 or 7 yards up on every carry. And then you got to kind of contain with that speed that they got on the outside for Georgia. And then, like you said, you gotta get a turnover, a big play, especially when you're playing at home. And this is probably one of the biggest games in Kentucky program history. So somebody's going to have to make a big play on special teams or on defense for Kentucky. And then for Georgia, I think the big thing is that you got to watch Jake Fromm. If he doesn't come out and play good like he did against Florida, they can kind of struggle against teams on offense. If he's not making the right reads or the right throws, or he turns the ball over, you know, that Georgia offense really starts to sputter out. So Kentucky also has to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball if they want a chance, which I think they have a pretty good chance. Kentucky's front seven obviously is really good, but Kentucky's offensive line is also pretty underrated. And Georgia's, if you had to kind of pick a weak spot of Georgia's defense, it's kind of that interior linebacker and kind of that front defensive line. So you gotta control the line of scrimmage, and you gotta make Jake Fromm feel a little pressure. You gotta throw some blitzes at him or kind of change up the coverage to kind of confuse him.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good matchup for Kentucky in the sense that where Kentucky's really, really good, Georgia's not that great. I mean, Georgia's got however many – they probably have five-star guys on the offensive line, but their offensive line is not that great, and that's really one of Kentucky's strong suits is their defensive line. So, like you said, that's going to be a huge key to the game is both sides of the line of scrimmage for Kentucky and even for Georgia. So, and the last part of that question, I mean, I don't have to answer this because it's a question for you. Will Logan be on State Street burning couches if Kentucky wins?
More than likely, yeah.
Okay. What scenario – I'll go ahead and answer this one. What scenario has to happen for UCF to get in? There's not one scenario that would have to happen. There's about 10, especially after their game tonight against Temple. They allowed 600-plus yards to a Temple offense. And, I mean, their defense it's a different UCF team last year. UCF's team may have last year even kind of deserved to have a spot or deserved to be in the conversation more than this year. Their defense isn't as good this year. They don't have the corner that – was a first-round draft pick. They don't have Shaquem Griffin. So they lost a lot last year. Their offense is obviously still good. Mackenzie Milton's a good quarterback. So, I mean, a lot has to happen. I don't see, unless every Power 5 team ends up with two losses, I don't see any scenario that UCF can even have a chance to get in the top four.
Yeah, it would take a whole lot of losing from the teams that are ahead of them just because their strength of schedule is one of the worst in the country, especially, you know, considering the top 15. And then the other thing as well is that they're not going to jump anybody unless these teams pick up some losses down here at the stretch of the regular season. So UCF, I mean, the best thing they got to do is obviously they have to win out. They have to go 12-0 and they have to win their conference. But a lot of stuff would have to happen. A lot of teams would have to, you know, kind of stumble here at late, and then really it'd be honestly be kind of some miracle for them to get in the top four.
Yeah, and so the next question is, we kind of agreed on this one, so I'm not really sure if you had another idea, but which team outside the top 10 has the best chance to make the college football playoff? I think it's definitely West Virginia sitting at 13. They're 6-1. Their one loss is to a good Iowa State team, and they have Texas this week, and I still think they have Oklahoma to go. So, and they have the Big 12 championship, so. Do you have another idea of another team that you think could make the playoffs outside the top 10, or are we going to agree on West Virginia?
Yeah, it's mostly West Virginia just because they're a one-loss team to a ranked Iowa State team. And then, of course, if they went out, I mean, they would, you know, start jumping over people. And then even if they won the Big 12, it would help them out a lot. So that's really outside the top 10, that's really the only team that I could foresee that has a, you know, pretty good chance of making it.
Yeah, and the next question is obviously from a Kentucky fan. They want us to give a quick Champions Classic preview. Champions Classic is Kansas versus number one Kansas versus number 10 Michigan State, and then Kentucky versus Duke. It's in Indianapolis. I'm obviously going to go. I think the Duke Kentucky game is obviously more intriguing. And it's going to be It's going to be more of an interesting matchup because there's obviously bigger names. You got Zion, you got RJ Barrett, and it's going to be interesting to see which guy kind of stands out for Kentucky because, like that column that we were reading, me and you were reading today, that Kentucky doesn't have a standout star. They have a bunch of really good players, but they don't have one standout star. So, Kansas is in the midst of the allegations and the investigation for the Adidas trial. So. And Michigan State always has a good basketball team. I'm gonna pick Kansas over Michigan State, and then I'm gonna pick Duke over Kentucky.
Yeah, I think I'll pick Kansas over Michigan State as well. And then I think for that Duke Kentucky game, I think I'll pick Kentucky over Duke just because of the the big question mark with Duke is that they don't know if they really have enough shooters and. Obviously, Kentucky's a pretty deep team, even though they are young. But, I mean, I think both of those games are obviously going to be super intriguing. It's going to show a lot about what's to come for the rest of the college basketball season for all four of those teams. But if I had to pick without really looking into it or, you know, kind of just off the top, I'd probably go with Kansas beating Michigan State and then Kentucky beating Duke in a close one.
And I'm excited to see how Duke's going to use Zion now that he's in a college basketball setting instead of a high school setting where he can just jump. I mean, he's still going to be able to jump over everybody, but I'm excited to see how they use him. And then I'm excited to see how Reed Travis fits in at Kentucky also. So so now we're going to move into – I know it's past Halloween, but we're going to move into the Halloween section of the Q&A. They wanted us to power rank the top five scariest dudes in college football in honor of Halloween. I'll go with mine first. Number five is Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver from Bubba. I think he's a college football version of Tyreek Hill. He's been pretty much unguardable all season, and he's probably the fastest receiver in college football. I don't know if that's 40-wise, but game speed. So he's obviously the scariest dude, well, the second scariest receiver that corners have to face skill-wise. Next is number four, Rondale Moore, wide receiver from Purdue. Obviously, everybody knows about him. He's a freshman. 5'7", 165. The dude's squatting 600 pounds. We've all seen the video. He's super fast, super quick, not big, obviously, like I said. And any corner on the other side of the ball is having nightmares of trying to tackle him. So, next one is going to be another wide receiver, Jalen Austin from TCU. dude weighs 198 and squats 780, 780 pounds. I don't really need to say any more about that. Jabari, number two, Jabari Zuniga from Florida defensive end at 260 pounds. He's just 7.9% body fat and can bench 225 with 27 reps. And then obviously the scariest dude in football, the most unblockable dude in football. He's actually not the biggest dude in football, but he's a huge name. He'll probably be number one or number two next year coming out of the draft. Ed Oliver, defensive tackle, nose tackle from Houston. He's 290 pounds with a vertical jump of 36 inches, I think, which would have been third this year for the combine. And then a 10-foot, 1-inch broad jump and can squat 650, bench 405, and power clean 385. He's definitely the scariest dude in college football.
Yeah, and I can essentially agree with that list that we, you know, that you put together, and we were kind of talking about it earlier today. So I can agree. It's kind of a weird question to ask, but I can agree with that list that you put out.
Yeah, and like you said, we kind of talked about that at work. So it was pretty much just a list we both threw together. Next one, and we pretty much threw this one together. I know we kind of got differing opinions on a couple of them, but first one, actually the question, what Halloween costumes best fit the top five coaches? We'll start with Jim Harbaugh. I went with Mr. Rogers because he wears the khakis all the time. Did you have another one that you was going to pick, or are you just going to ride with Mr. Rogers?
No, him and Coach O, they don't need to dress up for anything. They're characters enough.
Brian Kelly, you said Lou Holtz, right?
Yeah, that's who he needs to start dressing up like.
I think he needs to wear a brick costume and just go as Bush Jones 2.0. Coach O, you said he doesn't need a costume, but I think he does. And I'll link the video in the in whenever we get this podcast put up. I think Coach O needs to be Troy Landry from the TV show Swamp People. I'm not going to try to talk like him, but he even kind of looks like him. But if you want to Google it, just Google Troy Landry, Swamp People. If not, I'll post a link with this video.
Hey, bro, damn Gator now.
That Gator. Next one is Dabo. You said he should be a pledge from a frat because BYOB. I think he should be a zombie because it's BYOG, bring your own guts. and then the last one, I think Nick Saban should be Red Foreman. And Logan actually said he should be Pennywise the Clown because he's a clown.
He's a clown.
So that's all the QAs this week. I appreciate all the questions. They were a lot of fun this week. So just keep on rolling in. And don't forget to put your input in for the blue blood question. So next we're going to go with the we're going to start calling the spread on pick. My obviously it's still the same rule. Mine is Texas A&M at Auburn. Auburn's a 5-point favorite at home over Texas A&M. I'm going to ride with Jimbo and the boys. I think they pull it out. They lost last week on the road, and Auburn's coming off a bye. And I'm not really good at these things for whatever reason, so I'm going to go ahead and apologize to – I might need to write Jimbo a letter, but I'm going Texas A&M at Auburn.
Yeah, my pick for this week, spread them, is Duke at Miami. Duke is traveling to Miami, and Miami's a 9.5-point favorite. Duke has some pretty impressive ACC wins. They also have a couple bad losses, obviously, but, I mean, that's the same thing with Miami. Miami's super unimpressive. They're kind of a mess, honestly, right now, especially with that whole quarterback thing they've been trying to fix for the really entirety of the year. So I think the spread for Miami to be a 9.5-point favorite at home against any ACC opponent right now is kind of high, unless, you know, you're playing the bottom tier of ACC. But I think Duke will go in there and pull out a win and obviously cover the spread.
I think if Rozier's your quarterback, you shouldn't be a favorite in any game. It doesn't matter who you're playing. So that's the spread on picks this week. We're going to go ahead and jump into this week's pick 'em. First game we got is the big game, I think, probably the biggest game. Number six, Georgia, 9-point favorite at Kentucky. This is a tough one. This is the biggest game in Kentucky football history, and it's at home. And it's for a berth for the SEC championship. So I think that College Game Day should have came to Kentucky because they're going to have chances to go to LSU. This is probably one of the final chances, or one of the only chances they'll have to ever beat Kentucky for a marquee matchup. So Georgia's been here. Fromm's won these games. It's a good matchup on paper for Kentucky because, like we said, the Georgia's run defense isn't the best and their offensive line isn't the best either. But, I mean, I just don't know how Kentucky wins it. I think the Dogs win. And I think Kentucky's fine and their defense keeps it close. But, like I said, I think the Dogs win.
I have Kentucky winning. It's really a toss-up game. I'm just going to say this. I'm not going to be really surprised at either of the outcomes, either, you know, if Kentucky wins or Georgia wins. And I feel like a lot of, you know, Kentucky fans and a lot of people that are, you know, kind of trying to predict this game feel the same way. It's a pretty even matchup. I really believe, you know, we were talking about it earlier, I believe the game's going to come down to who wins the quarterback battle between Jake Fromm or Terry Wilson. With how both of these quarterbacks have really played all year, it's just, you know, it's a toss-up just like really everything else in this game. Both quarterbacks played a really big game when they played Florida. Of course, Kentucky played Florida, it seems like forever ago, earlier in the year. And then last week, Georgia dog stomped Florida. So both of those quarterbacks had really super impressive games against Florida. But everybody knows what Kentucky's going to do. They're going to try to run the ball and stop the run and not let you score in the red zone. They're one of the best defenses in the red zone. So the thing that gives me hope about picking, you know, the Cats is that Georgia got smacked by LSU a couple weeks ago. And really, I mean, if you think about it, LSU and Kentucky kind of play a similar game. They both kind of got, you know, iffy, really off and on quarterback play, and then they kind of just try to run the ball and really stop you on defense. So I'm not going to compare this Kentucky team to LSU, and I'm not going to compare Commonwealth to Tiger Stadium, obviously. But I think that's kind of an interesting thing, and it kind of gives me some hope picking Kentucky. But I think the Cats pull off the upset in Lexington on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be surprised either way. It's kind of like the LSU game a couple weeks ago, or the LSU-Georgia game, actually, that I wasn't sure who to pick, and I was okay picking that wrong. So, I mean, if the Cats win, I'm obviously not going to be mad other than the fact that you get the game up on Pick'em. So, the next game, we got West Virginia at number 17, Texas. Texas is, as of today, Thursday, is a 1.5-point favorite. After looking terrible the last few weeks, the Mountaineers have finally got it going. And they really got it going last week. Texas is in a tough spot right now. They got all the injuries. Ellinger isn't healthy. Their defense really took a beating last week at Oklahoma State. I think Texas plays some inspired football this week. I think their defense is going to be a little pissed off, to be honest. Texas is at home, but I think the Longhorns drop two straight, and West Virginia keeps their playoff and the Big 12's playoff hopes alive.
Oh, so you considering Oklahoma out for it?
No, I'm keeping Oklahoma in there.
All right, I got Texas win this game. I did say it last week that Texas is not back, and obviously that was proven last week. But I do think they win this game. West Virginia's really struggled anytime they've played a pretty, you know, relevant good defense, like being embarrassed by Iowa State a couple weeks ago, 30-14. And playing at Texas is really no easy feat. And I think the Mountaineers will kind of struggle to move the ball. And Texas, you know, I think they get their offense going. You know, they're kind of inconsistent. You know, obviously, if you watch the Texas-Oklahoma game, you think that Texas had one of the best offenses in the country. And then you can watch them really any other game, and it's kind of just inconsistent. But I think they get going. They are kind of banged up, like you said. But I think Texas really kind of gets it going down there in Austin and gets a good, solid win at home, and they beat the Mountaineers by 14.
Yeah, I mean – West Virginia doesn't win this game. That leaves it pretty much on Oklahoma to win the Big 12 and hopefully make the playoffs for the Big 12. So we'll see. The next game, it's really flying under the radar. It's number 16, Iowa at Purdue. Purdue's a 2.5-point favorite at home. Like I said, this is a super low-key, super important game for both teams because pretty much the loser of this game is out of the race for the Big Ten West after both teams lost last week. Northwestern is actually the leader of the Big Ten West at the moment. So Purdue's averaging 492 yards per game, and Iowa's only allowing 264, so something has to give. I hate picking Iowa. I don't trust them in bigger games, and Purdue is so explosive. I'm going to go with Purdue.
Boiler down, I have the Hawkeyes winning, you know, king of the cupcakes. I don't like picking them really for any reason. But, you know, against the Boilermakers at home, even though Purdue has been rolling as of late, and, you know, Iowa's kind of struggled these last couple weeks, Iowa still has a really good defense. And if you can kind of slow down that passing attack for Purdue and kind of maintain that freshman, you know, that freshman stud that they have, you know, their offense kind of stalls. Purdue's obviously not one of the best defensive teams. They kind of just keep it at a bare minimum, but I'd think Purdue keeps it close, and I think Iowa scores late to kind of ice the game.
Next game we got is another Big Ten matchup, obviously the bigger Big Ten matchup. Number 14, Penn State at Michigan. Michigan's a 10.5-point favorite at home in the Big House. Penn State struggled all year, even against semi-decent opponents. Even if they're not decent, they still struggled. And Michigan's absolutely dominating this year after the loss to Notre Dame. And it's in the Big House. Like I said, Michigan isn't good enough offensively to really blow anybody out. But Penn State's going to have their hands full. I think Michigan wins, and I think they win by 13.
Yeah, we kind of talked about Michigan, I think, last week or the week before. I think Michigan's going to pound Penn State. I think they've really got it going on all cylinders. Penn State's really been struggling. They've kind of been exposed, really, ever since that Ohio State game. And, you know, their coach gave that speech about how they're becoming an elite program, but that doesn't seem to be, like, the case. But Patterson, you know, you're talking about that offense, but I think Patterson and that offense finally kind of has it going. They can run the ball, and then they can also, you know, throw it out and let Patterson make plays like he's, you know, what he's usually best at. So, and really, if you can contain McSorley for Penn State, I mean, Penn State doesn't have a whole lot of weapons on offense, and if you can kind of just keep him contained and not let him run all over the field and, you know, move the chains and make big plays, it's kind of hard for Penn State to score a lot of points on you. And especially with Michigan's, you know, defense as good as it is this year, I think Michigan kind of takes Penn State's will away from them. I think they win by 17.
Yeah, and another Big Ten – well, not a Big Ten matchup, but another Big Ten team, the Big Ten West leaders travel – Northwestern travels to number four Notre Dame. Notre Dame travels to Northwestern. Notre Dame's a 9.5-point favorite. Notre Dame doesn't have too much competition left on the schedule. They actually do have to play now ranked Syracuse still. So, and they still have USC, which is obviously still going to be a tough game regardless. So, they don't have too much competition left, but the Big Ten West leaders are looking for another big win to strengthen their resume. But as Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. Not today. It's not the day for Ryan Mahr's favorite team. The Irish win and they cover.
Yeah, I'm picking the Irish again. Obviously, I think this is going to be kind of a trap game for, you know, against a scrappy Northwestern team who already has like an upset win over Michigan State earlier in the year, and then they kind of competed and they're still in the race, obviously, for that Big Ten championship game hope. So. Notre Dame is, you know, the more talented team, obviously, and they're the top four team to get in right now. So they obviously have a lot to lose against this Northwestern team. But, you know, Northwestern, they, for some reason, the past 2 years we've played, or the past couple times we've played Northwestern, we've really struggled. We've actually lost the last two meetings against Northwestern. But obviously this team's a lot better than years past. But I think Northwestern keeps it close for a half. Notre Dame kind of plays down to them, but then I think they kind of do how they did at Virginia Tech. I think they really kind of open it up early in the second half and kind of just pull away, and I think they win by 10.
And the next one we got is number one Bubba, 15-point favorite, like you said, at number three LSU. I mean, I think 15's a big spread because at LSU, but, I mean – Alabama hasn't faced a tough defense yet, and I just don't know if LSU can stop Bama, or if B, if they do stop Bama, they can even keep it close if they do. Like I said, if they do get stops, this is a good test for Bama, I think, and it's a good measurement stick to see how good this Bama team actually is, or to see if they're actually as good as we thought they were. So, I mean, everybody really, like I said, they get a feel for it. I mean, obviously, I'm picking Bama. I don't know if they cover. I think they do. I think they win by 20 plus, but I mean, I just don't know because Alabama hasn't played anybody yet, and LSU obviously has.
Yeah, I'm also picking Alabama. Like I said earlier, LSU is good at playing defense, and their offense is at its best when they can really run the ball and take a lot of time off the clock. But probably, you know, it's probably not a good bet when you're playing Alabama. This will be the first real test for Tua and the Alabama team, like you said. So I think it's going to be interesting. Of course, everybody's going to be watching that along with the Kentucky-Georgia game. But I think this is really going to kind of open people's eyes and kind of bring people back down to reality. I think LSU keeps it close. I don't think Alabama covers the spread. And I don't think, you know, I think this is kind of a reality check for people that Alabama is not an unstoppable, you know, unbeatable team. So I think LSU gives them a good game. I think it really goes down to the wire, but I have Alabama pulling it out at Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, and I mean, Alabama can – I mean, they can afford – they don't obviously don't want to, but they can afford to lose this game. LSU can if they want to make the playoffs. So it's a big game for a bunch of reasons. It's a big week for the SEC and for the Big Ten. So moving on to the ACC, number 22, Boston College. That's right, number 22 – Boston College is a 2-point favorite at Virginia Tech. How often do you think you get to say that? AJ Dillon's back for Boston College, and it's a bad time for Virginia Tech, who's allowing over 170 yards per game on the ground and got torched last week by the triple option by Georgia Tech at home. Virginia Tech's down this year. Obviously, they don't really have a quarterback. Their defense isn't what it usually is under Bud Foster. So, they haven't looked great since they haven't really even looked good since they beat an overrated Duke team. I'm taking Boston College to cover on the road.
Yeah, I also have Boston College winning. You know, the Eagles can really run the ball. Not that it matters since West Virginia, but since Virginia Tech can't really seem to stop the pass or the run, their defense is just not that good. But playing at home will help the Hokies, I think, but that hasn't been really a huge contribute to, you know, them this season. They've lost both of their games against FBS teams. They've played at home. And, you know, Boston College is still on the running to try to play Clemson in that ACC game and try to win the ACC. So this is a big game for them, obviously, in their top 25. And this is a big, big chance to kind of go on a tough – it'll be a tough environment at Blacksburg. I mean, it always is, but – obviously, the environment will probably be a little better than the team. So I think Boston College will take care of business and, you know, win by 14.
Yeah, and like another thing that we don't get to say too often, the Coastal Division, I mean, there's obviously a couple more teams that are in it, but Boston College and Virginia are the two favorites to win. So not that often we get to say that. And it's not that those teams aren't good. It's not that the ACC's bad. Like you said, the ACC's pretty deep this year. But Boston College and Virginia are poised to get a face Clemson to get their shot at winning the ACC championship. So on to the other side of the country, the Pac-12. We got Cal at number 8, Wazoo. Washington State's a 10-point favorite. Pac-12 After Dark is quickly becoming one of my favorite things to watch. It just something crazy happens every time you watch it, and it gets better. Whenever I get to watch Washington State and my man Mike Leach looking to keep their playoff hopes alive, Washington State is a terrible, and I mean terrible, targeting call away from being an undefeated, and Cal is looking to pull off the upset. I mean, if you're going to pull an upset, definitely Washington State is the team to do it against because they're so hit or miss. But the quarterback's averaging – over 300, I think he's averaging 397.4 yards per game. Minshew is. So Washington State is poised to kind of keep the Pac-12's chances alive to make the playoffs. And, I mean, I would love to see Mike Leach in the playoffs because that dude is crazy. So he's been coaching long enough to deserve it. So I'm going Washington State. I think they cover at home.
Yeah, I have Wazoo winning as well. I've been saying it the last couple weeks, you know, the games that we've covered for Washington State. All you got to do is trust that air raid and trust that quarterback. They're going to air it out against anybody. And, of course, Wazoo's trying to stay in the race for the playoffs. I mean, they're in the top 10, and I think they'll take care of business against this mediocre Cal team, and I think they cover the spread easily and win by 16 or more.
Yeah, and I mean, just to recap a little bit, that makes two straight weeks that we've both picked Washington State, and we've both picked Boston College. So it's a different year for college football. There's a lot going on. Obviously, it's still the top guys at the top. So, like I said, I want everybody to kind of chime in, tell me who your blue bloods are outside those eight that I named. Just let me know what you're thinking. Obviously, Jeff doesn't believe that Tennessee's a blue blood, but that's another conversation for next week. I appreciate everybody coming out. We're going to go ahead and sign off this week. And I, like I said, I appreciate everybody coming out again.
This is just a trip.